Welcome back, folks. It's Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And this morning we're talking with fiber artist Maria Teresa Fernandez. She was born in Kenya. Fernandez studied in London and Manchester, England. She participated in over 25 solo exhibitions and several international exhibitions. She's the recent recipient of prestigious international grants and awards like the Pollock Krasner Foundation Grant, the Ruth Chevin Foundation Award, and the UNESCO Arts International Award. Throughout her career, she has traveled everywhere, giving her the opportunity to reflect and create works relating to the surroundings of countries she's experienced. History and poetry are brilliantly woven into the fabric of Fernandez's work, which translates her physical and emotional attachment to the lands where she visited, loved, and stayed. She recently displayed her work at Morgan State University's James E. Lewis Museum of Art, and that's where we met to talk about her exhibit, Locations, Dislocations, Relocations, Embroidering Art, Poetry, and History.
So these are mostly, I had to worked on the unrest last year. So all these.
Were you here when that happened?
Yes, I just moved from England about 2 years ago. I used to live in Baltimore and I relocated back after 12 years. Oh. And so, you know, my work is about place. And the unrest had happened at the time, so I worked a lot on these pieces. Some of them have to do also with the community. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring the better part of Baltimore as well. So these are the pieces which is in collaboration with the poet.
So everywhere you've been, I mean, you said you always go, your work, your art is about place,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So I'm curious what that moment of that uprising meant to you about place and how these represent that?
I suppose because I was in the city, you know, and everything, it was happening at that time. And also some of my work is about social justice. So I worked on the poet, not the, the poet worked on the poetry and then we collaborated. So a lot of it is about the instances like Mondovan Mall up here was the first series, what happened up there. And these are the scenes outside Mondovan. And that's also to do with the National Guards that came for the day and were keeping guard on the city and the stadium that was locked.
Right.
And that's also about the disparity between the rich and poor neighborhoods, which I noticed a lot more than when I lived here before. I used to have a car then and I didn't notice it as much, but since I've been back, and you notice things a lot more when you've been away. You know, going on the buses and seeing the boarded mm-hmm. buildings and the leafy parts of Baltimore as well.
The leafy parts?
Yeah.
So who was the poet?
His name is Stephen Paul. And we both worked quite well. So sometimes I would present the images and then he would come up with the poetry to do with the city and the disparity, like this big book here, which is almost like a screen. And it's actually the differences between the rich and the poor neighborhoods. And that's his writing, which is applied with stitch. And I've also created my own surface, which is handmade felt. Mm. And these are digitally photo images, which are manipulated with stitch.
So let's talk about that for a moment. So do you want to read his poem? Or should I read his poem?
Oh, yeah. I suppose you could read it because I have an accent.
You have a lovely accent. What are you talking about? So I'll read it, and then I'd like to read this, but then I'd like to talk about this talk some of this piece. I'm curious as how you created it and what the pieces mean and how you did this work. So I'll read the poem that Stephen Paul is his name?
Stephen Paul,
right?
Yes.
Oasis of Wealth, Deserts of Despair. Gold dust gild tree shaded homes, garden streams, flowing down to the Golden Coast, piling up in the high rises for high rollers, splashing into sheltered harbors, millionaire marinas, never trickling down to barren places where the sand of despair blows down streets and alleys, over curbs and sidewalks, seeping under doors, through cracked windows, and rattling sashes.
Absorbing
the blood, but not the pain. Very powerful words.
Yes. And it's really showing, you know, the disparity, because when you go to some of these downtrodden homes and see pile after pile, row after row of homes, it's quite depressing. And then you see the marinas and the yachts in the harbor and the leafy parts of some areas. And I'm sorry to say, but I live in one of these, you know, leafy neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And what room have I got to talk to, you know, to say that? But I have also experienced living in near the projects when I lived in East Baltimore 12 years ago. So I am bringing some of those experiences into, you know, for. And on the other side is also the inequality about, you know, that's another poem. I can read that one. Inequality. The balance has been lost. Too few have too much, too many too little. The middle is shrinking. Pitchforks are in demand. Mm. And this shows the boarded buildings and the disparity. And then on the other side, the leafy homes in Guildford and Roland Park, which are quite amazing, you know, all the trees and beautiful foliage.
And you have this one piece of the foliage and beautiful home right next to an abandoned block.
Yes, yes.
So talk about your approach to your work. I mean, describe your work to our listeners.
It's quite a long process because I start with what's really influencing me or grabbing me or what really I'm passionate about. And at the moment, it's the city of Baltimore and what has been happening. So I take the photographs, I think about it, and then I manipulate the images with stitch.
And what does that mean? You manipulate the images with stitch.
My degree is in embroidery, which is yes, and Britain is one of the only countries in the world, not anymore, I suppose, because it's becoming like part of the textile department. But I started in the late 60s and 70s. I was going to be a painter, but when I went into the textile department, where they send us into each department for 6 weeks, I was really amazed at what could be done with the stitch. So instead of using the brush or pencil, we were taught all these very traditional techniques. And when people see my work, they think of it as, you know, it is very fine art, but at the same time, it's very textural as well. And so when I'm using stitch, it's almost like mark making. And they look almost like paintings.
They do look like paintings. And they started with a photograph that you took.
Yes, of the different parts. And then I also apply collage, like in this instance, the rubbish on the streets of Baltimore and the abandoned buildings. So it's mixed media as well. And the surface is handmade felt, which takes quite a long time. Mm. You know, you have all these layers. And then the text as well, because I just use an ordinary sewing machine. It's not the top of the line, but it does take a while, you know. Yeah. This particular piece took 7 months.
7 months?
Yes, because of the back and the front, and it's almost, you know, six panels.
Yeah. So
it's quite time-consuming. but I enjoy it, and you have this dialogue as you're working.
So, and as you do this, I mean, do you sit when you take these photographs and you have them laid out? Do you plot everything out ahead of time, or does it kind of flow as you do it?
I flow as I do it, and also it's planned, but at the same time, I don't plan it too much. It's very intuitive, but I know what I'm, you know, working on, and at the moment, I'm still focused on Baltimore because this is where I live, and the books are my new pieces. So I think as an artist, it's important to evolve and you're not doing it deliberately, but it's nice to face challenges, and it's almost like a scientist. You're experimenting with different media. I take workshops as well, so that I don't know everything, and you know it makes it exciting because you're discovering as you're working.
So, how did you end up in Baltimore 12 years ago?
I moved here because I have friends, and to me a place is important, even though I lived in London and it's a very exciting city. You can also be quite lonely in a place, and I think people make a place. You can be in the best part of the world, but if you don't have friends, it's meaningless.
So you grew up in Kenya.
I grew up in Kenya, and I lived there till I was 21. And I was very always passionate about art. Ever since I was a child, I wanted to be an artist. So I saved my fares for many years. I worked as a waitress for a year and did secretarial work for the Ministry of Lands and Settlement in Kenya, in Nairobi, and saved my fares and then traveled to London. And I'm very lucky because if you're British and you don't have much money and your work is good enough, you do get grants. So I studied for 5 years in England where I did embroidery, and then I took a postgraduate in art education.
And ended up here in Baltimore. That's interesting.
No, I lived... I lived in London, then I went up to Manchester.
In England?
In England, and then lived in Northern Ireland as well. I was teaching in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, during the IRA period.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So talk about what it is about your love of place that brought this as your artwork, that made this piece of you.
I think I've always been interested in other cultures. And it's not even about money. I would save my fares to go to all these places. And in the early 60s, I went to Russia when they took over what was then...
When you were a girl of 12.
Yeah. No, when I was actually 10 or 12, my parents, we went on the old ships to the Seychelles.
Wow.
And India, where the ships would stop in... they would leave Kenya across the Indian Ocean and would stop in the Seychelles. And I remember visiting the Seychelles as a child. I think I was only 6 or something like that. Yeah. So there's my parents too. My mother lived in 4 continents. And, you know, they moved a lot, people from my culture.
So, I mean, place is very important as a concept for people. But clearly you seem to have been able to, wherever you lived, to embed yourself in that place and feel it.
Yes, some countries, not
all.
Not all. But this piece is Nigeria. I spent 4 months in Nigeria. I got a National Endowment for the Arts, or Arts International, sorry. And I spent the 4 months with the Yoruba community. So this work is called Yoruba Symbols.
Tell us about this piece. What are we looking at?
This piece is indigo died where I learned the techniques with, you know, when
Nigeria,
I was
right?
in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was over 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I've used some of the symbols. I can't remember all the symbols, but the cowrie shell is the symbol of fertility. And you know, it's encrusted with some of the beads and the materials. So it's a collage using stitch. And the work is called Yoruba Symbols. This piece was exhibited at the Tokyo International Textile Museum.
So what is it that you think, I'm just curious, about your life of wandering to places and understanding place and your textile work, I mean, what is it, being different places, what has it said to you about how much we have in common or don't? How do you feel about that?
You mean people?
Yeah.
I think sometimes we think that we are divided, but we are not. You know, there's similarities between people. We are not as divided as we think we are, because there are certain types of food. You see the similarity, like, say, the samosa. You get the Mexican turnover, you know, meal that's similar, or the ethnically the spices that we use, but we use it differently.
Mm-hmm. So is this room your work as well?
Yes, this is the African room, and this is
we're in the African room now.
Yes, and this is Morocco, which is one of my favorite countries to visit.
Why?
I think because I spent 6 weeks also with a Berber family, and I got to eat with them, and they were very, very hospitable. And this is an interior of one of the places that I stayed at, you know, with
very
the
lovely
family, yes, and that particular piece there. So I did like Morocco a lot, and it influenced me quite a bit, even though it was only a short time, like 6 weeks. And this is Fez.
The city in Morocco, Fez.
Yes.
So that's where you lived in Morocco, those 6 weeks, Fez?
Yes, I spent 6 weeks in Fez and probably a week in a place called La Sila, which is a Spanish part of Morocco where mostly tourists go.
I mean, and you with a Berber family, which isn't, that's a very ancient, old
yes.
culture.
Yeah, I was told, though, by a lady that I met recently who's living in Baltimore, who's from Algeria, and she told me most of the Berbers live also in Morocco.
Right.
So the community is, you know, different to what I thought. I thought it was a small Berber community, but she said no. She told me that there was quite a few Berbers in Morocco itself.
And what's this piece here on the wall?
These pieces are influenced by my visit to Egypt that I went in the early 80s. The earlier pieces were all pyramids, but, you know, it's such, I've been an artist for over 45 years, so I don't know where these pyramids are. Some maybe have been trashed, or some I do have, friends have them. But I'm using the images personally because the cat is revered in Egyptian culture, and so is the snake. You see them on the pharaoh mm-hmm. headdresses, but I used it personally, and it's to do with my own life. You know, with the snake, I'm the cat in here, and that piece is called The Whisperer.
You are the Whisperer?
I won't say no more.
And so, and what do we have here? What's this room here? What is this room here?
This room is the French room.
French
and New Mexico and Juarez. So you have a few, you know, three places, I suppose. I spent 4 months in France at a beautiful place called Manet-sur-Seine. And the piece on the floor is called The Walk to Nogent. I would walk every day, which has inspired me to walk. I walk for an hour every day, come rain or shine.
Good for you.
And this piece is long and narrow because of the long stretch of this beautiful place which is quite narrow by the canal. And these are the drawings that relate to...
Are those your drawings as well?
Yes, yes. So Mane Susan was a very special place. I believe it used to be the center was a jazz place a long time ago. And Duke Ellington had gone there. But now they converted it to a visual artist residency place.
What part of France is it in?
It's not an hour from Paris, yes. And all these pieces are stimulated by the visit. At this time, I was more interested in the density of surface, so you can see why it's so richly encrusted with stitch. Mm-hmm. This whole piece is entirely stitched, which took months. And that's the road to Cotovan, which is another area of France that I would walk to, not far from Mané-Susen.
So, these pieces take a long time to create. Both, I think, it seems to me, you approach them, photographing them, laying them out, stitching them, yeah, finding the right colors.
At that time, when I was in France, the new work is more the I'm not a photographer, but that use it as a form of documentation. But these are really feeling the place and you know, spiritually, emotionally, that you were compelled when you walked and being with the landscape, the serenity, tranquility, that I would go back into the studio over there and just get absorbed in the work. So it's completely encrusted with stitch. And it's immediate.
And I love the way you just put that, encrusted with stitch.
Well, my English language is not that great, but...
What are you talking about? So how many languages do you speak?
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't.
How many do you speak?
I used to be able to speak two obscure languages, but I've been away for over 51 years.
So what are the languages? I'm curious.
I speak Swahili, but because I've been away so many years... And I could speak not very well, but the language that my parents spoke, which is called Konkani. It's a mixture, I think, of Swahili and Indian and a bit of Portuguese. So, you know, after 51 years, you lose it.
And English and French and something else?
No, I don't speak. I should be able to speak Portuguese, but my family didn't ingrain it in us. Because that's the language as well that my parents could speak, yes. Yeah, because the Portuguese were there for 400 years.
Right.
And the culture is quite interesting because it's a mixture of the foods to Portuguese and Indian. So the cuisine is quite rich.
I imagine it is.
Yes.
So this...
This is New Mexico. I spent... 7 months in Mexico, New Mexico, sorry, mm-hmm. New mm-hmm. Mexico. And as you know, the skies are wonderful, very moving. So this piece was inspired by the skies and then the adobe buildings in this piece, which is a collage. And then Juarez was just around the border. Yes, I know it's a very dangerous place, but as you can see, the colors are very different.
Oh, these are from Juarez, Mexico.
Yes, Juarez, Mexico. And I would go there quite a bit with friends, and we would spend some time there. When you leave the USA and go to the border towns, you do see the difference in some places. You can see by the colors that, you know, that it's so different, the country and the place.
No, absolutely. No. And I think that, God, looking at this now, since we're in the midst, or at the end of, I should say, this horrendous election in the United States, and the borderland takes so much of it in terms of building this wall they want to do. And
oh, yes, that Donald Trump wants to build. I mean, you know... it's amazing. I was in London where my old tutor from many years, there was a show in London about the Juarez murders. And it was in a very old town hall in East London when I was living within the 12 years there. And I went to this exhibition. A lot of the artists, I don't think, maybe only one had been to RS. And they had taken, the exhibition was about each woman that they chose without meeting them, their stories. And the artist had interpreted them in their own way. And when I told my tutor, ex-tutor of many years, nearly 50 years ago, that I had been to Juarez, he was really surprised that I had been there. But, you know, I didn't spend days, or I would just go every month for a week, a few hours or so.
Right. But I think about walls.
It's a colorful place. I bought a lot of threads and other things, wares for my artwork.
So when you do this work, you mentioned this a couple of times, the threads and things you use, these pieces are from the places where you're working.
Yes. In this particular instance with Juarez, I did buy the threads there. They were very
vivid.
The colors, they just inspire you by the colors of Mexico, and the buildings have all these paintings on the walls. I know we have graffiti walls here, beautiful pieces here, but I use the threads and some of the haberdashery from Juarez in this piece. And you can see by the images that they are quite different from the USA.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, the language and the whole, the colors, the place, and the symbols, I suppose, with the shops and stuff.
I'm thinking where we are in the world today, I mean, your life and work is about the exact opposite of walls.
Yes, it is.
It's about place, but not stuck in that place.
No, not stuck in that place. And, I fear about anyone building walls or barriers where people should be free to move around. Because I was a migrant myself in a way, you know, when I moved from Africa to come to live in England, some families were separated for months, even though they were British citizens, and people don't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had a British passport, we had a D in front. I don't know what was that about. And I didn't realize it till I went to Germany in 1968, and they stopped me at the immigration. I had to go back, and they asked me why I had that. They wouldn't allow me. And then I had to go to the British Embassy in Berlin to have it, rectified.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's keep Britain tidy. It's like a rubbish bin, and with the British flags. Because I was really, after 22 years I was going back, I got very angry to see the rubbish in the streets. So I created this huge piece that talked about the rubbish, and almost putting the rubbish into this big installation.
I love that.
And that's called The Weight. That's all about migration now. That was done a few years ago. These are all the different communities waiting in line or in a queue to go to be accepted into the country. The piece you just saw.
Of all the people's faces, the profiles.
Migration has been, I know it has been a topic for many years, but it's becoming a hot topic, even more so now. And that work was created then.
You have just,
These are my students' work. I actually mentored a group of students with physical and, mental disorder. I shouldn't say disabilities. And I was very proud when they wanted me to be their mentor. So they had art 3 times a week. We got them to have their own bank account. And they are very independent now. They go on the bus themselves. They don't need the big coach that would take them from the center that closed. And they've been in existence independently now for 6 years. I'm so proud of them. So I hope to see them in next week. Because
where are they?
They are in London, and I'm going for 3 weeks to London on a trip.
Good. That looks like Baltimore.
It is. These are all to do with Baltimore and the history with the screens.
Right.
So it's quite varied, you know. You're seeing my new work since I've been back. I'm doing quite a lot about the different parts of Baltimore and the boarded buildings. So I've created some prints which are in process at the moment. They're not in this exhibition.
So there's more to come.
Oh, there's more to come.
This is lovely. Well, Maria Teresa Fernandez, this has been an honor. I've been looking forward to meeting you for this work.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's been my pleasure.
My pleasure. That was Maria Teresa Fernandez talking about her exhibit, Locations, Dislocations, Relocations, Embroidering Art, Poetry, and History, which took place at the Morgan State University's James E. Lewis Museum of Art. We have to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we will have the latest installment of Booth Stories. Love the Poet will be in the house, as she always does, bringing interesting artists with her. This time we're meeting singer-songwriter Raina Williams. So stay with us for that. We'll be right back. Before we go to break, I want to remind you all, please join me January the 11th for the 14th Annual Annapolis Summit to be held at the Governor Calvert House in Annapolis on the opening day of the General Assembly. It's your chance to hear and have your questions heard when we talk with Governor Larry Hogan, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush. Your chance to really question the leaders of this state. For tickets, call Haley Poling at 443-524-8161. That's Haley Poling at 443-524-8161. Or you can email her, hpoling, that's H-P-O-L-I-N-G, at thedailyrecord.com. So do join us. It's always a great event. Good breakfast, good conversation, interesting people. Your chance to ask our state leaders the questions you want to have them answer. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by The Daily Record, Stevenson University, the Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, Maryland State Education Association, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, and WEAA.